Well, now to the impact of the internet. Cyber technologies and the internet are having a profound effect on human behaviour and on the development of children. Now, children as young as three are using tablets and computers in a way that we would never have thought possible, even just a few years ago. Unlike their parents, the children know no other world than the digital age, and the impact of the internet on our lives is a subject for debate at a cyber ethics public forum in Dublin's Trinity College this evening. I'm joined now by cyber psychologist Mary Aiken, who will be taking part this evening. She's from the Cyber Psychology Research Centre at the Royal College of Surgeons of Ireland. Thanks very much, Mary, for coming into us this morning. Can I ask you first of all, what is a cyber psychologist? What exactly do you do?
A cyber psychologist is engaged in the study of the impact of emerging technology on human behaviour.
And how do you do that?
Through research, mainly. We have now over 30 peer-reviewed journals publishing in the area, about 1,000 articles a year being published of research studies in the area. So there's a growing body of research and literature which actually helps to deliver insight at the intersection between technology and humans.
And at this point, Mary, is there research that proves categorically, if you like, that the way that in which we're now using new technologies is changing the way that we work or we think or that our brains function?
Not at this point. I mean, at this point, in terms of youth development specifically, we don't have the studies that can indicate definitively that there is change. However, that does not mean to say that studies aren't necessary. So certainly we at the Cyber Psychology Research Centre are very interested in actually engaging in studies that might actually look at differences in behaviour. But you're also dealing with children. So from an ethical perspective, it's a very difficult research area.
So some very big questions that have yet to be answered in the area.
Absolutely.
Mary, can I ask you, you are actually a forensic cyber psychologist. The team that makes CSI are looking at basing a new series on you in particular. Can you talk to me a little bit about this?
The CSI piece is actually they're looking at at the moment we're doing a pilot, which will be aired on the 30th of April in the US. And it's what's called a backdoor pilot. So effectively, it's going to be aired as an existing part of CSI Las Vegas. And they will do a pilot introducing a new character who is a cyber psychologist with the FBI. And that character has been inspired by my work as a cyber psychologist.
That's amazing. And are you involved in this yourself? Will you be kind of acting as a consultant to the scripting or producing? Or
if it goes to series, I'll be a producer on the series.
That's very exciting. So tell me, how did CSI come across you? What work were you doing that was so exciting to them?
They would be aware of my research in the area. I worked on a White House project for the White House looking at the impact of emerging technology on human behaviour. And they just became aware of my research in sort of a global forum and then asked me to participate.
I mean, in relation to crime in particular, I think it's that in a cyber, I suppose the whole area of forensics is about looking for traces of crimes having been committed. And in a cyber field, there are many, many traces on the internet. Would you be involved at that kind of level?
Yes, well, I work for a number of police forces. I'm leading a project at the moment for Interpol, an international project, which is considering youth behavioural escalation online. The point about forensic science is the study of the physical evidence at the crime scene. Forensic psychology is the study of the behavioural evidence at the crime scene. Forensic cyber psychology is the study of behavioural evidence manifested in a virtual context.
Okay, so what does that mean?
Well, Locard's exchange principle, it's a theory, and it's a basic premise of forensic science. And it says that every contact leaves a trace. So I've been in this room, sitting here, my fingerprints are now on this table. Every contact leaves a trace. People think that in an online environment, they effectively can do anything. But nowhere is this more true than online. Every contact leaves a trace.
So every chat room you enter, every tweet you send out.
Every contact leaves a trace. And the point is then it just becomes a big data issue. So that there is just so much information in terms of processing that information. Now, we're talking about contact in a criminal context. We're not talking about everyday contact.
And Mary, can I ask you, I mean, obviously the context that a potential criminal may leave behind online, they can be found by a computer expert, a scientist. Where do you come into it? Are you analysing what they have said online to figure out would they or would they not have committed a certain crime?
I don't really discuss forensic work.
Well, we're going to have to watch CSI to find out what you do.
Yeah, it's restricted information. But yes, certainly I would be involved in the process.
That's it. Well, you've made it sound extremely interesting there. One thing about people online is a phenomenon that has been identified as online disinhibition.
Yep.
Can you tell me about that? How people behave differently in an online environment?
Yes, that's the work of Professor John Suller, who's actually a visiting fellow at our RCSI Research Centre. And effectively, what it dictates, what it says, is that people will do things in an online environment that they would not necessarily do in the real world. And we've seen evidence worldwide of, for example, politicians, you know, conducting in behaviour or leaving digital evidence that, you know, it's perhaps unwise. The same happens, say, for youth, for children. I would say to parents, just because your child does something online doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to do it in the real world. So we published an opinion piece there recently on The Conversation where we looked at the phenomenon of neck nomination, which is a sort of reckless drinking. And what we considered was the combination of online disinhibition with alcohol-induced disinhibition was potentially a very powerful combination.
Right, so that's one example of disinhibition. You say what they do online, they won't necessarily do in real life. But, I mean, we saw today in the papers a report on youth gambling. Yep. I suppose that's one area where you are doing in real life what you're doing online. That's quite a worrying development for younger people.
Absolutely. So when I say engaging in, say, escalated behaviour online, maybe extreme forms of bullying where they might participate and say things in an online context that they wouldn't do in the real world. In terms of gaming, that's a different sort of base condition. What we see in that study today, and actually it's very worrying, the results of that study, because I think it was the Institute of Public Health, they said that gambling among young people was thought to be three times more prevalent than those aged over 21. And I think that's something that really, from an ethical perspective, and that's the tone of tonight's debate, is, you know, who is considering this? From a point of view of, say, alcohol or cigarettes, we've lots of public education and awareness campaigns. But who is talking to youth about the dangers of gambling? And if you look at any addictive behaviour, having an entity at your disposal 24 hours a day in terms of a smartphone that can directly connect you to an online gaming site, what is that going to do for the compulsive or addictive behaviour? It's certainly going to send it into overdrive.
Yeah, that's interesting. I suppose age is another issue, isn't it? When you look at alcohol, the earlier you start drinking, the more likely you are to run into trouble with it. Will that be the same for something like gambling, would you say?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, the point is, and this is the point again of the debate tonight, is that society has a role to play. So traditionally, when we get into debates about what youth do online, everybody says, well, it's the parents. It's up to the parents to actually, you know, look after their children. But I would argue that it's becoming increasingly difficult and challenging for parents to actually protect their children. And we're not just talking about safety online. We're talking about child development. We're talking about welfare. We're talking about the rights of the child. What about the right of a child to childhood, the right to innocence?
To not be exposed to graphic images that they will come across accidentally online, the way
exactly.
things are.
So I think this is a much bigger issue, and it's almost a human rights issue. And certainly that's our perspective on the issue. If you also look at a real world example, we talk about real world and virtual world. In a real world context, we don't expect parents to be manning the doors of public houses or of off licensed premises, stopping their children buying alcohol. You know, the state we plays a role in terms of governance in that regard. So I would argue, you know, about the issue of policy and governance online. Now, luckily, the Irish government is doing something about it. The Minister for Communications recently put together an Internet Content Governance Advisory Group, and I actually sit on that group. And currently, we are debating these issues, and we have had public consultation.
And is it going to be possible, definitely, to do something about it? I mean, can you protect children from the internet with legislation?
I think the thing about technology is that technology was designed to be rewarding, engaging and seductive for normal populations. Nobody thought about criminal, abnormal and vulnerable. Did we really design technology for children? And in a real world context, we have the shallow end of the swimming pool. We have playgrounds. The real challenge from a technology perspective is how do we deliver that to children? And it's, you know, there's no question about the merits of engaging with technology for children. The real question is, how do we ensure that they can do that and at the same time have a childhood?
But I suppose my question is, with something like the internet, it's a global phenomenon. You don't know who you're talking to when you go online. You don't know who has created the sites. Is it, I mean, while I think we would all aim at policing, at controlling it to some degree or another, is it actually going to be possible?
I think that problems that are created by technology, ultimately the solution lies within technology itself. And this is essentially a big data problem. You know, you have the largest social network has over a billion members. The average number of posts is 1.25 a day. That's 1.25 billion pieces of data.
Wow.
So we really have to think seriously about moderation, and we have to think about human moderation. You can use machine intelligence or artificial intelligence because of the size of the problem. But the one thing that artificial intelligence cannot do is actually display empathy. And that's a very human entity. So as cyberpsychologists, we're interested in factoring the human back into the equation. Technology ultimately is about humans, about the people who use the technology.
And Mary, who are you looking to do this? Is it companies like Facebook or Twitter, or is it governments around the world?
I work at a sort of a governmental level in terms of an independence from industry to actually be able to look at the area. We apply for research grants from, you know, EU funds and any Irish grants that are available. And we use that money effectively to conduct our research. But as always in research, money is an issue and funding is an issue. You know, Ireland led the way in terms of the cigarette ban worldwide. We also led the way with the ban on or the tax on plastic bags. So really the question is, if we care enough about rubbish to tax plastic bags, what are we doing in terms of raising funds to protect children online?
OK, and you're going to be speaking about all of these issues and more tonight in Trinity.
And I would just like to say that we have a couple of places available. So the talk starts at 6 p.m. today. It's the Stanley Quirk Hall at Trinity's Biomedical Sciences Institute. If you want to come, please come at 6 o'clock. Log on if you want to guarantee that you get a place. You'll find it online.
OK, well, listen, Mary Aiken, thank you very much indeed for coming into us this morning.